It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Jared Breitigan case. This is one we haven't talked about in quite a while. It's been sitting rather stagnant as motion after motion takes place, and we're still looking maybe late next year. We're going to see a trial. If you're new to this, well, welcome. Hit subscribe, because we are covering this, and we're going to cover it to its finality once the trial does take place. But there's been some big movements in this as of late. So here's where this case just took a sharp, messy turn. The man who admitted to pulling the trigger in the ambush killing of Jared Breitigan walked into the court and told the judge his own sworn statement was false. Then within 24 hours, he sat down with prosecutors and said essentially, well, actually it was true. I'm just second guessing my life choices. Essentially what happened? That's the center of gravity in this update, because when your entire murder for hire case is built around a cooperating hitman and that hitman starts wobbling in open court, everybody's radar kind of goes off. Let's walk through what's really actually happening here and what it means. We'll start with the basics. Prosecutors say this was a calculated contract killing. On February 16th of 2022, 33-year-old Microsoft executive and father of four, Jared Breitigan, is driving home through Jacksonville Beach near after dropping his older twins at the home of his ex-wife, Shanna Gardner. His two-year-old daughter is strapped in a car seat behind him. It's dark, it's residential, a normal weeknight. And then he comes across a now infamous obstacle in the road, a tire sitting right in his path. He pulls over, steps out to move it, and someone is waiting. Jared is shot and killed in front of his toddler. Prosecutors have called it exactly what it looks like, a staged ambush, a murder-for-hire plot, allegedly orchestrated by his ex-wife, Shanna, and her then-husband, Mario Fernandez Saldana. The man they say actually pulled the trigger is Henry Tenen. He was the first domino to fall. In March of 2023, Tenen pled guilty to second-degree murder with a weapon. As part of the deal, the state waived the normal sentencing guidelines, and he has agreed to testify against Gardner and Fernandez. In other words, he became the linchpin of the state's narrative. The hitman who connects the money, the planning, and the motive straight back to the former couple. And for a while, that cooperation looks straightforward. Tennant admits his role. He implicates Mario Fernandez as the one who hired him, and he sets prosecutors up to go after the alleged masterminds with the death penalty on the table for both Shanna and Mario. Then we hit January 13th of 2025 in a hearing that was supposed to be routine. Just a routine step on the way to trial, Tennant suddenly tells the judge that he gave false testimony in his sworn statement accusing Fernandez. This comes out not in a quiet sidebar, but in open court, and shows up later in a defense motion filed on Mario's behalf. According to those filings and reporting, Tennant pushes through his lawyer's attempts to keep him quiet, insists on talking, and basically tries to tell the judge, "What I swore to before isn't right." The judge stops the hearing, tells him to talk to his attorney, and the whole thing gets reset. From the defense side, that moment becomes a gift. They now have a documented instance where the state's star cooperator is saying his own statement is false. You can imagine the panic that might set off. If you're the prosecution, you built a massive high-profile death penalty case around the guy's willingness to get on the stand and walk the jury line by line through the plot. If you're the defense, you see blood in the water. A cooperating witness who looks confused, scared, maybe pressured, maybe conflicted. Either way, it's fodder. And then comes the next day. Tennant sits down with prosecutors for a follow-up meeting. And here's where the story goes from "my testimony was false" to something that frankly sounds like a man in over his head, trying to reverse engineer a way out. Tennant tells the state that he said what he said about Fernandez because he thought if he gave them a story, they'd investigate and somehow discover he wasn't actually guilty. The prosecutor reportedly responds with what every normal person is thinking: it makes no sense to confess to a murder you didn't commit as a strategy to prove you're innocent. After walking through that twisted logic, Tennant backs off the false testimony claim. He reportedly tells prosecutors that his sworn statement implicating Fernandez was actually true, and no one threatened him. No one told him to change his story. And that was what he originally said. What he originally said about being hired to kill Jared was accurate. What's changed, he said, is not the facts, but his regret. He now believes he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison, whether he cooperates or not. So he's second-guessing whether taking that agreement was worth it. That's the heart of this new development. You have a confessed hitman who's on record both calling his own testimony false and then within a day saying, "Actually, it was true. I just didn't like where that will leave me." From a legal perspective, that's a dream scenario for cross-examination. Any competent defense attorney is going to stand up at trial and say, "So, which version was the truth? The day you told the judge you lied, or the day after when you told the prosecutors you hadn't lied or just regretted telling the truth?" They're going to hammer his motives, the plea deal, the potential sentence, the fear of dying in prison, any hope he has for leniency. They will make that jury feel every inch of his self-interest. And the jury will have to weigh all of it while also looking at the paper trail. Remember, Tennant doesn't exist in a vacuum. There's a money trail prosecutors say links him financially to Mario and Shanna, checks, payments, interactions allegedly tied to Fernandez that the state argues funded the murder for hire scheme. The defense, of course, is pushing back, asking for more records and trying to poke holes in how those transactions are interpreted. Then there's the physical and digital evidence, the tire used as a lure, phone data, vehicle movements, and the broader pattern of what investigators say were long-running tensions over custody, money, and control. Prosecutors have painted a picture of a bitter divorce, a new marriage, and a woman who, according to their theory, wanted Jared gone and allegedly moved from anger and resentment into a plot to have him killed. Texts reported in prior coverage, like messages where Shanna allegedly talks about wanting him out of the picture, are going to be front and center in the narrative. That's the battlefield. On one side, you have a cooperating killer whose story has wobbled, but ultimately comes back to, yes, I did this, and I was hired. On the other, you have two defendants staring down possible death sentence with their lawyers now armed with the wobble as Exhibit A in the You Can't Trust This Guy campaign. And all this playing out against the backdrop of a case that keeps stretching further into the future. The trial in this case has already been pushed back multiple times. It was originally set for October of 2025. Now, after another round of pretrial wrangling, it's been postponed to August of 2026. That delay isn't just a calendar note. It speaks to how massive this prosecution is. Reporters describe their plan for up to 500 potential jurors in the pool, separate consideration for each defendant, and an anticipated trial length beyond 6 weeks, plus a penalty phase if either is convicted. In the meantime, pretrial hearings have kept the case in motion. Just this fall, Shanna Gardner and Mario Fernandez were back in court for another evidentiary hearing. The state attorney's office recently released a large evidence package, body camera footage from the crime scene, 911 calls related to Jared's murder, and video of officers interacting with Fernandez in his truck. Those visuals matter. It's one thing to read about an ambush in filings. It's another to see the chaos on body cam, to hear the calls, to watch the man prosecutors say helped orchestrate this sitting in a vehicle talking to law enforcement. On top of the criminal case, there's a civil layer that's now on ice. Jared's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit, but that case has been formally put on pause until the criminal trial is resolved. So for the family, justice is now staggered, two-front battle. First, a criminal courtroom, then someday the civil one. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with a state that still has its star witness on paper. The deal is intact. The plea stands. And as the latest filings, Tenet is still the man who confessed to being the shooter and to being hired to do it. But it also leaves us with a record that shows he tried to walk that back, even briefly. That's now baked into the case forever. And if you zoom out and look at it behaviorally, you see a pretty familiar pattern with cooperators. He's not some mastermind. He's an older guy who, according to reporting, was scraping by, allegedly doing odd work for Mario and living in a property linked to him. When the hammer comes down, he's offered a lifeline. Pled, testify, maybe you don't die in prison. For a while, he takes it. Then as the reality of 15 to life sinks in, as trial dates move, as ship dates on sentencing creep further out, he panics. He starts fantasizing about a world where he can both undo his confession and somehow walk away. That's what that "I only said it so you'd find out I was innocent" line sounds like. Not a carefully crafted conspiracy, but a desperate guy trying out an impossible story. That confessing to murder was a weird path to exoneration. The prosecutors call him on it. He folds back into the original version. Legally, the state will argue that's the truth. The sworn statement that implicates Fernandez, the money, the planning, the defense, will argue the opposite. That what's really true here is that Henry Tenen will say whatever he thinks serves Henry Tenen. And in the middle of all that is the fact that Jared is still dead. His daughter was still in that car seat, and his family is still watching year after year tick by while this grinds through motions, hearings, delays, and now a hitman who can't keep his story pointed in one direction. As we stand right now, we're in that strange pre-trial limbo. Gardner and Fernandez remain charged and presumed innocent under the law. The state is still planning to put Tenen on the stand as the man who says, "I did this and I didn't act alone." The defense is sharpening knives over every inconsistency, every email, every gap in disclosure, every procedural misstep. The trial itself has been kicked in all the way down the line. Now to August of 2026, with enormous resources being staged just to get a jury in the room. So when you hear the headline, "Confessed Hitman Changes Story," don't read that as the case collapsing. Read it as the case getting messier and more dangerous for everyone involved. For prosecutors, it's now credibility war that they're going to have to preempt. They're going to have to own Tenen's wobble in front of the jury, walk them through why he tried to recant, and convince them the original statement is still rock solid. For the defense, it's an ongoing battle and an opening they will pound on, but it's not a magic eraser. They still have to account for the rest of the evidence, the alleged money trail, the history, and the state's theory of motive. And for Jared's family, looking at yet another reshuffled timeline and yet another round of headlines about a man who has already admitted to shooting their son, their brother, their husband, in front of his toddler, this isn't drama. It's a reminder that even in the most clear-cut murder-for-hire plots, justice is never straightforward. It's human. It's messy. It depends on people like Henry Tenen holding the line on the truth they swore to, even when that truth guarantees they will grow old and probably die in a prison cell. We'll keep following where this goes. The next hearings, any new evidence drops, and how both sides start shaping this false testimony moment into a weapon at trial. Because when your key witness is the admitted hitman, the question isn't just, what did he do? It's whether 12 strangers will trust the way he tells it. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. There's a lot in this case, and there's a lot of new pieces that have dropped that we're going to start dissecting and going through here on the channel. So don't miss any of that. Hit subscribe. Trying to get to 100,000 before the end of the year. We're almost there. We need your help, though, to do it. So if you've not hit subscribe on YouTube yet to our channel, please do so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case. And let us know your thoughts in the comment section. My name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.